99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned for Off the Hook. Coming up, it is now 7 p.m.
Due to the flood in the area you are calling, your call cannot be completed at this time. Please try your call later. 078P.
It's those last few seconds I sometimes like to hear, you know, because it just sounds different than the rest of the song. So extended period of the theme there. It's Off the Hook. This is Emmanuel Goldstein, and over there is Kyle.
Yes, I'm here.
And again, you're telling me something with your hands. I don't know.
I just saw a light blink on one of the channels. I think it's our telephone channel.
It's
forget
a
that.
Huge board. Lights
don't
blink.
Worry about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's just acknowledging your announcement here.
Thanks for acknowledging it. Can we go to Skype land? In Skype land, I see. Whoa. Is that Alex there?
It is I.
Wow. Okay. Welcome to Skype land. Welcome to Off the Hook. Welcome to WBAI.
Well, it's good to be here.
It is good to be here. And you're the only one in Skype line tonight. So it's going to be a cozy little show. And we're going to have overtime at 8 o'clock over on YouTube. You can get there by going to youtube.com/channel2600, all one word, and the numbers 2600. Or you can just click on the link on the top of 2600.com webpage. So, lots of things going on. I guess let's start with a dramatic announcement. We got them. Oh, yeah, folks, we got them. Let's wait for the cheering to die down. You know what I'm referring to, right?
No, I don't know
what
we got.
We're referring to the Grand Theft Auto hacker, the one who stole the source code or caused all kinds of problems in the world of people who want to pretend that they're stealing cars and things like that. 17 years old, apparently over in England, Oxfordshire. Yeah, according to a statement made to Eurogamer they got the right people covering this story. Eurogamer was at the hearing. The City of London Police's cybercrime unit, the Oxfordshire boy appeared in a specialist youth court in London on September 24th, pleading guilty to two counts of breaching his bail conditions. So apparently he was already in trouble, and not guilty to two counts of misuse of a computer. He pleaded guilty to breaching bail, but not guilty to misuse of a computer. Okay, interesting. The teenager has been remanded to a youth detention center, and that's a center with an R-E, not an E-R, so you know they mean business. The unnamed teenager is supposedly a member of the hacking group Lapsus, with the dollar sign at the end. We talked about this last week. He was reportedly one of seven arrested, as they were accused of hacking companies like Microsoft and Uber. In March, according to BBC News, a teenager was 16 at the time. He was described as someone accused of being a multimillionaire cyber criminal. Okay, now the story gets a little bit more interesting. So he is a multimillion-dollar 17-year-old cyber criminal who stole the source code or the release of the latest Grand Theft Auto. Okay, so the Grand Theft Auto 6 leak, am I saying it right, or should I say VI? Because they say VI, but I'm going to say 6, because that's what VI means.
Yeah, that's a, I think, reasonable interpretation.
Unless you're using the editor VI, in which case you say VI. Do you think that means 6?
No.
You sure? Have you been using 6 all these years?
that would be something.
All right, wise guy, what does VI mean then? Not so easy, is it? I want to say virtual something, but virtual editor would be VE, not VI.
Interface?
See, folks, we do this without going on the internet.
Interpreter.
So if we sound stupid, it's because we're just not checking, you know, Google for every question that we have. So this is, you're seeing our honest brains here failing.
Virtual interpreter?
Oh. Virtual interpreter, Kyle guesses. So I'm
That's
sure.
That's totally wrong.
I am sure we will generate more mail than ever from people just stumbling over themselves to correct us.
Well, apparently the correct answer is visual.
Oh,
wait, did you look it up, Alex?
Yeah, I did. Did I just spoil the fun?
Yeah, you spoiled the fun.
I know, I did.
You ruined the entire point of the exercise, is that we were using our brains and not the internet. I can't control you. You're already in cyberspace. You're in Skype land. I can't control what you do.
I know. That's true. Yeah. Apparently it stands for visual. I didn't know. I never knew that. And it's older than I am. It was released in 1976.
Can we get back to the crime at hand that we're discussing? The Grand Theft Auto 6 leak included 90 videos from the game's test build and showed information such as the two playable protagonists and the Vice City Metro setting. Ruined the whole thing. Rockstar Games acknowledged the hack and confirmed that the early development footage were all legitimate, claiming that the company suffered a network intrusion in which an unauthorized third party illegally accessed and downloaded confidential information from our systems. Elsewhere in gaming, Netflix is building its own gaming studio. I don't know why that was included in that story. But, so they caught the guy. I think they could have made another game out of it. You know, the hunt for the guy that hacked Grand Theft Auto. I don't know. But then again, you know, you hear the guy's a multi-million-dollar cyber criminal. That sort of puts a different taste in your mouth.
Yeah, I had an impression that that it maybe was something that had been a priority for the people that were affected. You got to be, not everyone is just going to be a victim, so I don't know. And then, you know, whatever they turned up was interesting enough to unravel something that was being wielded in a wider way to users and this trail of evidence, I guess.
You got to tell me what you want me to do, Kyle. You're making hand signals.
Can you do
the
speaking? Thing where you shuffle a little bit? Because I can't hear. It's not something.
You sound fine to me.
Okay.
So what do you want me to do? You want me to turn you up or turn you down?
Well, it's at that one threshold where you found that sweet spot.
Yeah, but you can't go up any higher. You see, you put a piece of tape there, so I can't push it up any higher.
No, not me. I think it's the Skype.
If I move the Skype thing, we're all going to sound terrible.
Okay, well, just...
You sound fine. Alex, how does Kyle sound to you?
He sounds, you know, okay. No better, no worse than usual.
As irritated and fuming as ever.
What
okay.
We used to.
All right,
so, and you know, you can just tell me what you want me to do, because I don't understand hand signals. Or write down on a piece of paper and hold it up. That would be nice, too.
I'm getting some exercise in the process. So, I just like to be active here.
Yeah, there's another big story, apart from the Grand Theft Auto debacle, and that involves Edward Snowden. Have you heard about this? Edward Snowden has been granted citizenship by Putin himself, apparently. Russian President Vladimir Putin granted citizenship on Monday to Edward Snowden, the former security consultant who leaked information about top-secret U.S. surveillance programs and is still wanted by the United States on espionage charges. He was one of 72 foreigners granted citizenship in a decree signed by Putin. Now, you know, I got pretty strong feelings about this because a lot of people are very ignorant about the facts involving Snowden in the first place, that he chose to live in Russia and betray his country. No, he did not choose to live in Russia. He was stranded in Russia because the United States canceled his passport, so he couldn't go anywhere else. And he was lucky enough to be able to find a place he could stay. And this, you know, it's not ideal that he be a Russian citizen, I suppose. And certainly Putin is using this for political advantage. But don't say that that Snowden is at the root of all this. He would like nothing better than to come home and face charges that are fair. We know damn well that's not what's going to happen if he does come back to the United States. And, you know, what's happening to Julian Assange, totally different story, totally different person. But it gives you an idea of the way things would go because the story has just been so overblown, sensationalized. And when you think of all of the good that we learned, you know, certainly the facts that were brought to bear were not good, but the knowledge of those facts, that is something that we deserve to know about, the fact that we are being spied upon, the fact that there are these cover-ups involving everything from the NSA to phone companies. This is something we all need to know about. And if you listen to his explanation, you see that he's not some crazy person looking to just reveal everything. He's very thoughtful as far as what is revealed and what is withheld. He talks to journalists and gets them to do the investigating of what it is he's talking about. And this is somebody we should be celebrating, not punishing. So the fact that he is now a Russian citizen, I mean, it's good for him because he has a place now that he can stay in. It's bad for us. It's bad for us because we could be benefiting from his presence.
Yeah, and I think that it's just as useful, I think, to adversaries and folks to jump to a conclusion about his allegiances, especially given the complex context we're in now. And I don't know if anybody can really say, like, what information we have now and how good, you know, our reporting is I don't know. It seems like it's pretty limited, and there are a lot of factors at play, and I don't know if this was ultimately the goal or the plan. And I think that I don't know. It just seems like jumping to conclusions and being certain about it is it's a pretty bold.
Honestly, you know, after all this time that he has been forced, and he has been forced, to live over there, not be in the United States with his, you know, the rest of his family and the places that, you know, he grew up in, the things that I imagine he holds dear. You know, if you believe he should be punished, did he not get punished already? I mean, at what point do we show a little compassion here and start thinking about how do we make things normal again? What Snowden said upon being granted the citizenship, after years of separation from our parents, my wife and I have no desire to be separated from our sons. After 2 years of waiting and nearly 10 years of exile, a little stability will make a difference for my family. I pray for privacy for them and for us all. Which is a nice barbed remark there, which I really appreciate. Alex, I'm very curious what your thoughts are on this.
Yeah, I not surprisingly have somewhat differing thoughts from your own on Snowden and this citizenship development. I mean, I don't canonize Snowden in the same way that I think you do and many others in the hacker community do, and I understand it's an unpopular position to take. I'm on such a saintly figure in many ways. But, you know, I'm also somebody that worked in this and had in the intelligence community and had the same clearance that Snowden had. I also had TSSCI. And I think, you know, there is got to be some measure of respect and control for classified information that belongs to the U.S. government. And while I do believe that what Snowden originally and initially disclosed about the massive surveillance network that was targeting the Verizon Business Network subscribers was on itself prima facie unconstitutional, and therefore could have been the subject of legitimate whistleblowing. And I think that also there were valid reasons for Snowden not to go through the ordinary whistleblowing channels that existed at the time in the intelligence community, because the historical precedent of whistleblowers in that capacity has not been good, and you know, is the outcome probably would not have been favorable to Snowden. However, you know, you mentioned that he had put all of this information into the hands of journalists and curated it and made sure that only certain stories got out, et cetera. I don't necessarily think that that's the case. I think what Snowden did after his initial disclosures with the Verizon Business Network, massive surveillance network, was really a smash and grab job. And I've said this many times before on the show, that the information that he grabbed, and then it was a massive amount of data that he had stolen from the U.S. intelligence community and put into the hands of journalists, had more to do with legitimate targets of U.S. surveillance than anything else. You know, there was no need for the targets of U.S. surveillance in the European Union and other places to know that we were surveilling them. Nothing about that was illegal. Nothing about it was unconstitutional. He may have taken some kind of he may have had some form of ethical objection, perhaps, to this type of surveillance, but it wasn't illegal. It's par for the course, and it's, in fact, what every single country that has an active intelligence community would do. And so I don't think Snowden deserves to be canonized in the same way as many others in our community do. I think he was brave. I think he was a whistleblower, for sure. But I also think that by him continuing to stay in Russia, that he is, in a sense, taking umbrage under the regime of Putin. And he may or may not have a choice because, you know, his citizenship was pulled. His citizenship was not pulled. He did not denounce his U.S. citizenship. He's still a U.S. citizen. He can come back. I think his passport may have been suspended. And so, you know, I see this development with respect to Russian citizenship as, you know, maybe giving him and his family some measure of comfort, maybe allowing him perhaps to travel, although I doubt that he will step foot out of Russia. But look, I think it's a mixed bag for me with Snowden. I think on the one hand, he has to be applauded because he was brave. Some of the stuff that he blew the whistle about, I think, was a legitimate concern. But I think for the bulk of it and the rest of it, and we don't even know where a good amount of the information that he stole from the U.S. government currently resides. You know, and don't forget, he chose Glenn Greenwald as the repository.
Okay, but
this information.
In fairness, Glenn Greenwald was saner back then. I don't want to get into personalities here, but
the seeds of insanity were there.
Yeah, but you know, I don't think it's fair to say people are canonizing him. Certainly not us, because I don't think we're doing that. I do believe that what he was able to reveal included a lot that affected U.S. citizens. The fact that the NSA was spying on them.
It confirmed what we have been publishing and talking about for a very long time, many other people. Okay, and a lot of this stuff, the reason that was put forth was the interest, the public interest in these programs, and I blame the lack of transparency. I'm sorry, like, no matter how important, how secret, how special and boutique all of these systems and programs are, if you're not communicating, you're communicating to representatives who are lackeys and who are just doing the bare minimum in positions of, you know, committees and stuff, and not communicating effectively to the public about the importance of these things, you're gonna have people question them. And at the time, the context, the multiple wars at effect, the under specious circumstances, I think, and mostly as like post 9/11 attitudes conquests, I think, with unbridled access to resources to transform and multiply the effects of the abilities of these FISA courts and all of the things that we've been talking about. It's not necessarily that it was new, what Snowden was saying, in other words. It's that it confirms so much in the public interest from a deep level, and you can tell by how he was pursued and so forth. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what more we can say, though, because even in the investigation and the reporting of it, where was the transparency? It's like, you know, there were all, yeah, movies and a lot of, like, publicity around it, I think, from the community. And that, I think, was an effect of a lot of the whistleblowers. But it has really no bearing, I think, on the impact of whistleblowing the concept or surveillance writ large the concept and a lot of the issues we've talked about. Like, think about how much we've been speaking about the future of how data is used. And, I mean, that for us, I think, is what may have come off as, like, lauding what was confirmed in that stuff. And, I mean, once it's happened, whether our adversary, I mean, if other people know about it and you double down on being even less transparent about it, it's still out there, right? And how is the public to be secure or have any kind of confidence in these programs that their tax dollars are going towards if they themselves are compromised by such leaks, you know? And of course, we learned a lot about submission and how to do responsible whistleblowing. We're seeing it even now with social media companies, and that in place of oversight in general and a good public communication by politicians who are actually doing a lot of the work investigating and looking at some of these areas of technology and its interface with the populace. But I think that there's a lot of nuance here that can be really, really damaging to overall unity in the community and the public overall.
Yeah, look, Kyle, I don't totally disagree with that in any respect. I think that the issue here for me is that, notwithstanding the fact that there were legitimate objects of whistleblowing that he disclosed, And I think that we can certainly agree on that. We can certainly agree that a lot of what he disclosed certainly confirmed what we were always talking about or suspicious about in many ways. But it didn't end there. It wasn't a surgical approach. It wasn't some kind of scalpel-like exfiltration of data that confirmed this massive surveillance network. I think what had happened was more akin to a smash-and-grab job where he grabbed a massive amount of information from the U.S. intelligence community, and some of it related to, you know, active and legitimate targets of intelligence collection. Some of it put people in danger. Some of it could have compromised sources and methods and then put others in danger. And so there's a lot of, I think, collateral consequences of these Snowden disclosures and leaks that, you know, we still are seeing to this day. And my problem is that he didn't curate all of this himself. He didn't even, I think, understand what was in all of the data that he took. He took it and he put it into the hands of others who then eked it out story by story and got as much juice as they possibly could have out of this data for the benefit of their media organization.
Okay, but you know, it's called the free press, all right? And Alex, what you described as smash and grab, how could he have possibly done it any differently? Would they have given him an office where he could go through all this material and pick out the things that were, in fact, directed at the American people and leave out the stuff that was legitimate intelligence?
Yes.
I mean, you know, that is why he enlisted the help of Laura Poitras and Glenn Greenwald, because they were journalists that he trusted to actually do that part of it. And I think for the most part, that's what they did.
No, I think it's different in the sense that, you know, he could have ended his exfiltration and theft of information as it related to the massive Verizon surveillance network that he had disclosed initially. That, to me, absolutely legitimate object of whistleblowing and should be out there in the public interest, and because it was prima facie unconstitutional. You know, and then you had, I believe, intelligence officials not being exactly forthright about that program, as it turned out. And so, sure, there's certainly a lot of issues there. But he could have stopped there.
Why would you stop there? I mean, do you think that's the only thing they were doing? You know, when people are acting, dishonestly, do you say, okay, we caught you, we're not going to investigate anymore because that's the only crime he possibly could have committed?
No, he should have, if he wanted to, he could have done it anonymously, leaked it to the press in an anonymous way that didn't lead back to him without doing an additional smash and grab.
I believe he was trying to be anonymous in Hong Kong, was he not?
I have no idea what his intention was in Hong Kong, but I know he was handing off data, I believe.
He certainly wasn't looking for the limelight. That's one thing that I got from following all the stories about.
I'm not entirely sure about that. I don't know if I would entirely agree with that. I think he was looking for a bit of the limelight here. He was playing some cloak and dagger, and he took a huge amount of data. He didn't have to take that amount of data. And the reporting that came out was embarrassing and damaging to the U.S. intelligence community.
What he could have done, Alex, is simply dump the whole thing so that the public could see it. You know, like our Grand Theft Auto hacker did. But he didn't do that. He enlisted the help of a few trusted journalists who he believed would go through it and hold back on the stuff that could endanger lives. All the things that Julian Assange is accused of not doing, this guy did.
Well, he essentially abdicated his responsibility to curate this data in a reasonable manner. And that to me is not, you know, laudable in any respect. I mean, he gave this to journalists, and he left it up to them to go through the data.
Yeah, but who's going to curate it if not journalists? Who would you trust to do that?
You know, honestly, I would have trusted him to look at the information. He actually had legitimate access to this information and could make an assessment as to whether or not something was lawful or unlawful, even being a non-lawyer. This is something that he did initially. He did that with the massive surveillance dragnet that he disclosed. And he was able to make a reasonable assumption that, hey, this is something in the public interest. It could have ended there, and I would be right with you, singing his praises. But because it went so much farther than that, for me, it's really a mixed bag. And I think that he acted irresponsibly.
Well, what do you think should happen to him now?
look, I think
cut right to the chase.
Yeah, I mean, if I were in charge of what would happen to Snowden, I would probably offer him some kind of clemency. I think it's wrong for him to be stuck over in Russia, despite my misgivings about his intentions and the effects. I think 9 years in exile, almost 10 years, where it was 2013 when this happened. I think that's way long enough for him to be suffering and missing his family and being outside the country. And I think that this grant of citizenship is in some way a recognition of that. But, you know, look, it's Russian citizenship. I think it's obvious to all of us that Snowden is a great mind. He's a brilliant mind. I think he's one of the brightest and most brilliant minds of our generation. I just don't agree with everything that he did. But I'd love to have him back here in the United States. I'd love to hear what he has to say about content moderation, about what's happening on our various platforms, misinformation, election interference. I feel like we're really missing out on a lot by keeping him over there.
You know, yeah. I hear this so often. You know, it ended well with Chelsea Manning. You know, she's thriving and able to, you know, share things with people, not locked up in prison someplace. You know, we've said this to so many of our friends in the past. This person should be out there. We said it about Virgil, our friend, who's currently in prison for 5 years for, you know, a ridiculous charge. And we can certainly say that about Julian, too, I think. I think he has suffered more than enough, and this should just end. Let him go. Let him live his life. Enough with torturing people. It's far worse than anything that has been revealed. And, you know, if you're going to be applying this this strict punishment for people who reveal secrets, you know, there's a guy in Florida right now that I can think of who's revealed a lot more that is pretty much not getting anything done to him. And, it's shameful to see how that plays out.
Yeah, I think there's some irony there, and that I agree with both of you. I think that there's been, I mean, what more could we do? What more can be done to go into the technologies of play, the who, the how, what was done over a period of time that was a different circumstance completely than the current moment, and I think that they need any kind of reintroduction here, if ever, would not go unobserved, right? So it's not like they would have anything but a normal reintroduction, but of course people would see them and they would be subject to all kinds of normal public life that here, I don't know, how would it be normal?
Well, that's a good point. That's a good question because,
you're just going to go to the ice cream place and see Julian buying a banana split?
Whenever, let's talk about Snowden for now, but it certainly would apply to Julian as well. Whenever I fall into his timeline one way or another, I retweet something of his or he retweets something or we tweet the same thing, and you get people, on Twitter where people reply to both you and the other person, even if the other person isn't a part of that conversation. The hatred and vitriol that I get whenever Snowden is part of that conversation is scary. It really is. And that, to me, is the true threat, is that kind of, threats of violence and just ignorance and hatred. It's really horrible, and I fear for anybody exposed to that kind of thing in real life. So that is certainly where I would be concerned. And I remember, back in, 2016 when Snowden gave our keynote at the HOPE conference, we were so honored to have him do that remotely from Russia. And it was with Daniel Ellsberg. It was a truly incredible event. But we were so honored to be able to hang out with Snowden's parents in the East Village and just show them around. And I was able to get from them how Edward Snowden got his values because they were so honest and good. Just seeing the problems that exist in society, but not judging, and I just was very impressed with that, and I could see how somebody would feel that what Edward Snowden eventually did was a hard choice, but the right choice, because it was honest, and it was something that needed to be done. There's very few people that I get that immediately from, but those people I did.
Now, look, I agree with you there. I think it was definitely a hard choice, a life-changing choice, a choice that he made from which he could never go back. And there's, I think, a great amount of fortitude and bravery that goes along with having to make those types of choices and making them the way that he did.
Patriotism, that's what we expect our soldiers to do, to fight for democracy. And I think he's doing something very, very similar.
Yeah, look, I disagree that all of his choices were right. I think the initial ones were right. I disagree with some of the subsequent choices. But, also in terms of the ability to bring him back here in some way or another, I wonder if he would want to come back. He may. I think he would in some ways. In some others, maybe not. But, there are ways to have some form of justice be served without giving him clemency or dropping the case entirely. I mean, if I were the attorney general here, I think what I would try to do to get Snowden back into this country would be to work out some kind of plea agreement whereby he would get probation or, some kind of fine or something like that, because he has suffered. He has, I think, paid a great price for what he did. And being stuck in Russia all this time is absolutely horrible. But this is a vocal person, and I think he's been also noticeably absent about Russia's atrocities and what's happening in Ukraine, and he probably fears for his safety if he speaks out there, just like anybody else in Russia who would fear for their safety if they spoke out against
Ukraine. It's actually, even worse. It's worse for him because while everybody in Russia has to be afraid of speaking out against the government, He might face those penalties, but he could also be booted out of the country and sent here. he'd go through even more hell.
But
all that said, you know, I could see him speaking out anyway. A great personal sacrifice. That's the kind of person he is.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I think it's unfair to criticize. And there has been a great deal of criticism directed towards Snowden for it concerning his failure to speak out about Russia's human rights abuses and aggression in Ukraine. And I think for the reasons you just mentioned, Emmanuel, that's unfair criticism.
Yeah, and it's not just him. It's his family, you know. So you have to think of multiple people there. But we'd love to hear what listeners have to say about this. OTH@2600.com is our email address. Or you can call us after 8 o'clock on Off the Hook Overtime over on YouTube, channel 2600. Hey, we have a letter that somebody sent us. This comes from Oddbjorn of Norway. Oddbjorn. Yeah, Kyle, do you remember we met somebody named Odd who was from Norway on the QM2 when we went overseas?
Yeah, we know Odd.
He was an old British guy that somehow had Norwegian roots, and he just was talking to us about all kinds of artificial intelligence. But he must have been in his 80s, but he was so passionate about this, could not get him to stop. Believe me, we tried.
He was always discussing the I in IT as being more important. You know, there's the technology,
right,
but there's the information. You know, what is the information?
And
he would not let go of that.
No, he would not let go of that. Even after we got off the boat, he would not.
No matter how much I thought I understood it. Uh-huh. And
no, you never could.
So just make sure you have more I in, uh-huh, in than T.
I mean, hopefully he's listening, but Odd from England, that's who he was, but he was originally from Norway. Anyway, Oddbjorn, to your letter. In Off the Hook Overtime, you complained about the difficulties uninstalling malware like Facebook. Oh, I like this. I like where this is going. Malware like Facebook from Android devices. In the past, I have had success uninstalling malware that is uninstallable from the device itself using Android Debug Bridge from a PC it's called ADB. With ADB installed, installed packages could be listed with this command, ADB shell PM list packages, which gave a long list of names that are very different from the names listed on the device. Using an online translation list, I was able to find the name of the malware that I wanted to remove and uninstall it with the command to uninstall com.malware.bloat. That's what we're calling it, I guess. So the command would be ADB shell PM uninstall dash K double dash user, is that a zero or an open and close parenthesis there?
That's a zero.
That's a zero. Okay, I couldn't tell. We need to replace the ink. com.malware.bloat. These days, we are almost required to have a Google or Apple device in order to interact effectively with the world around us. Here in Norway, they are used for two-factor authentication, for logging into our banks, online card payments, charging our electric cars. You need a Google device or an Apple device to charge your cars? Wow. Buying tickets for public transport, payments for parking, and more. If one does not use apps from Google Play or Apple App Server, or Apple App Store, rather, for these things, one is punished by having to use less convenient methods and, in some cases, with higher prices. I like using apps for many of these things, but I do not like being required to be a customer of either Google or Apple and accepting their terms of services in order to use these apps, nor do I like using non-free software. Amen on all of this. I have for a long time run, I don't know how to pronounce this, CyanogenMod? Okay, and later Lineage OS on several Android devices, which I like because it is mostly free software and hopefully without malware. Unfortunately, I left those devices incapable of banking, charging cars, and so on. I recently discovered that I can install software from Google App Store without installing any Google software and without a Google account through an app called Aurora Store, A-U-R-O-R-A. Unfortunately, many of them did not work since they required a malware called Google Play, or Google Play Services, rather, to be installed on the device. Luckily, there is a free software alternative called Micro G, with a version of Lineage OS passed with MicroG. I installed the apps I need to interact with society, and several of them seem to work. I have noticed that the problem seems to be accelerating. More and more services need these Google Play or Apple App Store apps. I fear as we move forward, things will get even worse. More services will require apps to interact with, and those apps can only be found on two places, or in two places, Google Play and Apple App Store. Companies, authorities, and politicians are not going to understand the problem of requiring users of services to also be customers of Google and Apple. Most people will not see it as a problem either. I hope it gets better, but I fail to see how. What do you think? Well, Bjorn, thank you for that excellent letter. You raise a lot of really good points, and your passion and dedication to bypassing all of this is admirable. I wish I could say I saw a clear path to something better. I think we still have to build that clear path. We have to, in much the way that Linux came up out of the ashes, I think we can come up with an alternative way of doing all the things that we need to do in this day and age using our smartphones, but without signing on to either Google or Apple and just figuring out a way to do it ourselves. But we have to work together. You know, we can't be in our own little camps. We can't be, condemning one particular version over a different one. There's a lot to learn, but I think there are enough people that really feel the way that you do, that we do. And this is definitely something, it's a big project, but it's something that I think is necessary, and I think it's something we can accomplish.
Yeah, making it fun and in different ways, adaptable, something that is easily understood, those are crucial. Those are key things that give people the ability to share with others and work around some of these issues. But it is this overall trend of software as a service, and now in operating systems, and which has many ways been a tradition with the telephone. But in this case, I think that it's just something fierce. You have to protect fiercely the ability to do general computing anymore. It is territory that wants to always be connected and always working with a system from afar or from some other area and as a part of a component in a larger systems, and people got to understand that this is how it's structured, and it is what they are relinquishing a lot of their control to. And standalone software running on a standalone operating system or something that you can modify or update, it's becoming too much work. Or when it becomes too much work, we're relinquishing that control, and you got to protect that. You got to help people understand and help people feel like they are empowered in this in the process of resisting some of the temptation.
Yeah, we have to resist the temptation of just turning it all over to some other entity because it's easier, whether it's putting things in the cloud or just having your contacts organized by some massive corporation that you know nothing about, who inevitably at some point lose it or expose it to the public and it gets compromised. If you want to do something like run your own mail server, you're basically told you're crazy. Nobody wants to do that anymore. And we see it all the time. But the benefits really pay off. What do you think, Alex?
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think we're all beginning to reconsider the Faustian-type bargains we've made with big technology companies over the past few years and wonder if it was worth having a permanent email address at Gmail to have it continually mined year after year for its content so that some platform could get a better profile of your purchasing and communication habits, which could then be sold through a data broker to another platform and then repackaged with some other data and then sold to another platform. And So yeah, I mean, I think it's high time we begin, really rethinking these types of bargains that we're making.
Absolutely. All right, we have one more story to get to tonight before we go to overtime. This is interesting. The organization Girls Who Code. It turns out the founder of that organization, Reshma Sajani, recently found out that her company's book series had been placed on a list of banned books in schools. Girls Who Code. Banned. Think about that. The series chronicles a group of young girls and their adventures as part of a coding club at their school. It was added to Pen America's Index of School Book Bans. Now, Pen America is basically, they compile lists of books that have been banned. And this story just hit a couple of days ago, and it's been blowing up all over the net. There's a problem, though. The problem is that this happened a year ago, and we're only just finding out about it now. It's definitely something to be outraged at, but what I'm seeing a lot of people being outraged at school districts that overturned the ban. They overturned the ban in September of 2021, and it was the books had been banned for 10 months before that. And we're only just finding out about all of this now. That's the problem, that it takes that long to find out that books are being banned and which particular books are being banned. So it's important to know the facts of the story, to know that they're not banned. They haven't been banned for a year. But the question is, why were they banned? And also, how do we find out a lot quicker when a book does get banned? Because certainly the people who are banning the books, they know what books are being banned. You know, they're spreading this information somehow. Do we have to join their club to get, you know, the updated list? This story, you know, had it been jumped on a year and a half ago when it was actually happening, that would have been a very, very strong story that everybody, I'm sure, would have taken an interest in. So Johnny says she believed the move could have been part of a larger effort by Moms for Liberty, which is a conservative organization that advocates for parental rights in schools, including oversight of educational material. Makes sense. After publication, Moms for Liberty said allegations that Moms for Liberty has worked to ban Girls Who Code are completely false. Those books were joined by other recent additions to the list, several of which tackle racial, women's, and LGBTQ plus rights issues, including The Handmaid's Tale, Speak, and Fun Home, a family tragicomic. But again, those are recent. Those are a lot more recent. In fact, they're still ongoing in many cases. Susanna says, we use these stories to teach kids to code. It felt very much like a direct attack on the movement we've been building to get girls coding, especially in districts that don't have the technology or have disparate Wi-Fi. Books are a great way to learn to code and a way to equalize access to coding. She added that removing the books not only hinders visibility for women in technology and technology fields, but also diversity in the industry, as many of the protagonists in the series are young girls of color. You cannot be what you cannot see, she said. They don't want girls to learn how to code because that's a way to be economically secure. The authors of the Girls Who Code books joined Sazani in speaking out about the ban. Joe Whitmore said, yep, I've been banned because some people choose not to focus on how awesome and empowering and inspiring these books are, but instead choose fear. After learning of the ban, Susani said she reached out to the Central York School District president, I believe that's in Pennsylvania, and several teachers in the area to understand why the books had been banned. It's an opportunity to realize how big this movement is against our kids and how much we need to fight. This is an opportunity to start more clubs, get more girls to code, and get more girls to become economically free. Couldn't agree more. But the important thing is to also know the facts that they're not being banned now. In fact, the people in that school district, the school board, the teachers, they could have played a major part in preventing these books from being banned. And unfortunately, they're being targeted now as the instigators of the ban because to many it seems, and I think the story even ran, as if it was happening right now. So we have to just be careful that we have the facts straight, but this is something I want to know more about. I want to know how this happened, who was behind it, and where is it happening now? Because undoubtedly, if one school district was banning these books, there are others. So we need a better pipeline to that information so that we're on it as soon as it happens.
Yeah, it's called journalism. We got to not deride it, have a little bit of faith, a little trust, and maybe a little more awareness about the place it has in society.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, the bad information, I think, is a big theme there.
It happens a lot. It happens a lot, especially on the internet, where dates aren't always apparent. In this particular case, though, it's a major story. It's something that we all need to know about. It's just, it's important to also have, you know, the current updates. But again, you know, I want to know where this is happening, and I want to know, you know, as soon as possible. You know, when the library in Smithtown, Long Island, tried to ban gay and lesbian material during Pride Month in the children's area, it got such an immediate response that they were forced to turn back within 24 hours. That's the kind of thing I'm talking about. When people become aware of this, they act, and there are consequences. Go ahead, Alex.
I think just more fundamentally, the whole notion of banning books in a school district is just ridiculous. The whole thing is absurd, and it caused this bizarre timeline conundrum as well. And that I think what happened here was that the books were supposed to not be used or put on this banned list for resources, but they were already being used, and books that were being used were accepted from that ban until sometime last year, when people got angry that there was no movement on this ban list, so then they reissued some kind of decree expecting movement with regard to those resources, and the Girls Who Code book was on it. But it's just a crazy thing to ban books like this as well. I mean, I can understand adult material, pornography, you know, maybe the, you know, the Anarchist Cookbook shouldn't be in every public library.
Well, we can talk about that, but I'm sorry, Alex, we have to stop now because we are out of time. Well, let's take it up on overtime. Join us on YouTube, Channel 2600, or write to us, oth@2600.com. Keep listening to WBAI. We'll be back next week. Good night.
Your name is Big Brother. You say that you are watching me on the telly. See me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me protesting. Children dying every day. My name is nobody, but I can't wait to see your face inside my door. Oh. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you got me all in the notebook, writing it down every day. Your name is off. Your name is Theo. I'll send it to you both. I live in the ghetto. You just come to visit me round election time. Hi. Our leaders, I don't even have to do nothing to you.
cause your country to fall.